Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, here we go on a Friday, a red Friday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Steven Serta with you as the Chiefs get set to take on the Chargers. The late afternoon Sunday game, which I love. It means a little more red zone channel earlier in the day. It means Serta can keep track of all his fantasy football. It means you guys can sweat your Survivor League picks because this guy right here doesn't have to do that. Thank you, Cincinnati, for going down to the Cleveland Browns.
I still feel like it was an awfully risky decision by you.
Keep on every.
Are you going to keep being this risky, or are you planning on taking some teams that are, you know, winning a number of games?
I don't know. I might have to go with the Dolphins.
I dare you. I dare you to go with the Dolphins versus the Jags next Thursday night. I dare you.
I don't know if I'll
do
that. I don't know if I'll go that far, but it's working. Typically, on Thursdays so far, 2 weeks in, when we give our picks, usually Rob Brennan from the afternoon, he'll hop in and be critical of the pick. Ryan's critical of the Browns pick as well. And
are you always this insufferable when you do well?
What do you mean?
Very
just
proud
look
of
at
himself.
It right now. Look at the.
I'm very happy.
You know, you guys could have the Browns. I wouldn't have to worry about it this weekend.
I take more enjoyment when people are critical of the picks. That's all. If you guys didn't say anything about the picks, I wouldn't. But
like, listen to your voice. It keeps going up at the end. Just, it's the sarcasm. It's dripping off.
That's great.
I don't know. Why are you guys so bad at this? I don't know.
You're back in the Packers.
He's very proud.
It's working out. So far, the strategy's working. That's all.
It is. I can't argue that. I feel like it's a risky strategy.
Well, I got really nervous when Carrington picked the Browns yesterday. I did.
Yeah, that probably didn't make you feel great, but now he's alive.
He is. He's back in it. He's back in the mix. We'll see how things go for everybody else on the Survivor picks, and we will talk a little bit more about the weekend ahead for the rest of the NFL coming up in about 45 minutes or so. But last night, we saw a little bit of the future, at least on one side. Maybe the future still for both teams, if you like what you saw from Baker Mayfield as well. But the Browns and Bengals, the Browns did get the win against Cincinnati, and we saw former Chief Kareem Hunt look very, very good, and I think we found the key also for the Cleveland Browns overall for them to have success going forward. But is the formula also for Cincinnati 60 times throwing the football? I don't think so whatsoever. How many times did Joe Burrow actually throw the ball?
61
times. 61 times.
In college? I mean,
not very often would be the correct answer.
That would require a lot more research. It wasn't even about. Like, when I watched that game last night, that wasn't Burrow's fault. That just nowhere close. Their offensive line is trash. Their defensive line is trash. Their corners are trash. They have a good running back. They have a good quarterback. And under most circumstances, I would say they have good wide receivers. And they looked pretty good last night, except for A.J. Green couldn't seem to catch a pass. But beyond that, I mean, like, come on. Am I supposed to take away some big breakaway from the game? My biggest concern out of all of that was you watched that game last night, and I asked myself how the hell the Chargers only scored 16 against that team. That's a concerning sign for them and a really good sign for Kansas City this weekend. And then I felt like I watched the Browns use the less good of two running backs for a majority of that game when Kareem Hunt was clearly the best back on the field, and both backs dominated, mind you. But Kareem Hunt looked like his old self. And the Browns won because they could run the ball whenever the hell they wanted to last night.
Yeah, and I know it's hard to argue against 8.6 yards per carry, which was the average for Kareem Hunt. And I think some of it, though, is Kansas City and the fondness that a lot of people still have for Kareem Hunt and the success that he had when he was here in Kansas City. But I think it's also probably doing a disservice to Nick Chubb to sit there and claim that it was clear that Kareem Hunt was the better back. Let's remember, though, when a bulk of the 10 carries came for Kareem Hunt. They came against it was already a bad rush defense for Cincinnati, but a tired Cincinnati defense. Nick Chubb was doing a bulk of his 22 carries when it was still a fresh Cincinnati defense overall. You can shrug your shoulder at it a little bit, man, but that does factor in late in the game as well. Let's also remember, like, Nick Chubb was, this was from Pro Football Focus this morning, in fact, was hit at or behind the line of scrimmage 55% of his runs, and he still got 124 yards rushing. So I think
they also put up the same stat of expected rushing yards versus what they got. And considering he got 12 more carries, Nick Chubb only got...
Yeah, well, that's the average difference, 8.6.
No, but he got four less expected yards. As in expected, like, you're supposed to be tackled, that's where your yard ends. Nick Chubb only got four less yards than Kareem Hunt's expected rushing yards, essentially, based on where they should have been tackled. So, you know, the broken tackles is more on Kareem Hunt than it even was on Nick Chubb. I'm not saying Chubb didn't do his... I'm saying, like, when you point out that Chubb broke all those tackles, yeah, Kareem Hunt did too.
Half his runs, though, were behind the line of scrimmage, and he still got 120. He was hit behind the line of scrimmage, I should say, and he got 124 yards. So, no, it was impressive all the way around. Kareem Hunt, remember, just got the new deal. But you're right about the Chargers. If you know what happened last week for the Chargers against that Cincinnati team, and if you are them knowing the task that you have this week, a much better Chiefs defense, clearly, you know, the best offense, one of the best offenses in football. If you're the Chargers, you come away seeing what happened last night to the Bengals, and you're thinking, oh boy, the Browns were able to do this on the ground. We've got Austin Eckler and we've got Kelly as well. They might not be Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, which is the best 1-2 punch running back wise in football, but still, for us to not have had that kind of success, that's got to be really worrisome for a Chargers fan heading into Sunday afternoon.
I would think so. I looked it up, by the way. Joe Burrow never threw more than 49 times in his college career. That was in the national championship game against Clemson last year. But it's, yeah, if I were the Chargers and I looked at my offense, or if we look at the game coming into this weekend, I told you it had some of the makings of what you would say a trap game, right? A team that knows you, sandwiched between two better teams, right? Like, oh, the things that, like, factor into normally what would put you in a position. They do something well, you do poorly. All the reasons I mentioned. But then I go back and, you know, like what Serta had said earlier in the week, and I watched that Chargers team, you know, score 16 points against the Bengals defense. And I know that they were down more players than they were in week one, but my God, the Browns just did whatever the hell they wanted to that team. Like, it just whatever they wanted to the Bengals defense. So doesn't exactly give you a warm and fuzzies if you're a Chargers fan. If you're a Chiefs fan, you might have stopped thinking just win and instead blowout come Sunday afternoon.
What does it have to look like on Sunday, though, against the Chargers for the win? Or if something went wrong and the Chiefs somehow end up with a loss against the Chargers, you guys can let us know over on the Smitty's Garage Burn Beer text line, 913-576-7610. And, you know, these first 2 weeks when it's clear the Chiefs are the better football team heading in, it's really, really tough, man, to find ways where the Chiefs come out with L's. That might change next week when you start to get into a Baltimore Ravens team who we recognize is the biggest obstacle for Kansas City's chance to get back to another Super Bowl. For me, it's Tyrod Taylor has to have a career day if you're trying to find ways. And it's tough to find them, by the way, where the Chiefs don't come out with a win. I just don't see it happening whatsoever. Tyrod Taylor has to have a career performance. Multiple guys need to, I also believe, not just Tyrod on the Chargers. And the Chiefs have to have special teams turnovers, not even so much offensive turnovers. It has to be where the Chiefs are losing possessions because of their special teams as well, where it's, all right,
they don't do that very
they
often.
Don't, which is why you got to really search for it and why you're just almost making up reasons to find it. That's how difficult it is to find a scenario where the Chiefs blow this. Tyrod Taylor has to play incredible and put together the best performance of his career to have a chance late, and the Chiefs probably still overcome that. That's what we're going to say a lot about games where the Chiefs are clearly the better football team.
I think, yeah, I would say so. They'll have to make mistakes in order to do it. But with some other teams, it's easier to find, like, the avenue in which, like, when you're saying Tyrod Taylor has to have a career game, if you're saying Deshaun Watson has to have a career game, that's a much easier proposition to actually imagine. Because we know what a career game for Deshaun Watson looks like. Next week against, or 2 weeks from now, against the Patriots, you know what a career game for Cam Newton looks like, what a career game for Lamar Jackson looks like in a week. You actually have some sense of that. What the hell is a career game for Tyrod Taylor? You go for like 290 and two touchdowns? Is that going to beat Kansas City? The only way they lose this game is if the Chargers run the ball the way the Browns did last night, as in Josh Kelly and Austin Ekeler can just do whatever the hell they want. They run for 170 to 200 yards. Like, legitimately, I think that's how many rushing yards it would take to beat Kansas City on Sunday. 170 to 200 rushing yards, and then and not just a turnover, but multiple. And that's really the only way that it makes sense.
But is that the way you can even beat the Chiefs anymore? I'll play this for, this was Chris Sims the other day on Pro Football Talk Live, and he was like, he mentioned he doesn't have any concerns, and he said, typically, the thought is you can do what you just described. Like, if you're going to beat him, you got to just run the ball and keep the ball out of the hands of Patrick Mahomes. This is what he said in response to that.
The things that, you know, I used to worry about with the Chiefs, I don't worry about anymore. I don't. Oh, the Chargers, you want to run the ball and just play that style of football? I think those days are over where you can just bleed the Chiefs out in the run game. The front seven's become too physical. They got difference makers. You know, with Clark and Jones there, I mean, damn, they're beasts. I have an understanding of Steve Spagnuolo's defense now too, and they got a lot of creativity involved with talent, and that was one area I always used to worry about them. They proved to me in week one and last year into the playoffs that they can stop teams from running the ball when they want to, aka the Titans and 49ers.
So the difference he views is just they're too strong up front, where it's not even as simple as, oh, well, if you just can run against the Chiefs consistently, that's going to get you wins. He doesn't believe that's the case anymore.
Well, what he's saying there is that he just doesn't think the Chiefs are a bad rush stop team anymore. I don't believe that yet. What we have, like, what, like two games of evidence that we're basing
last
that
off
games.
Of? Last three games, I guess.
David Johnson ran well. Yeah, that was like the one thing the Texans did well in that game. Like, they didn't do a lot well, but David Johnson actually ran the ball well. Like, I'm not saying they were like, well, I mean, he did.
I guess. If
11
you count,
carries
if you count,
for 77 yards, they let up seven yards a carry on the ground to David Johnson.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you want to give credit to the Texans in their rushing attack when they were down by two touchdowns in the third quarter and were still deciding to run the clock a little bit.
I'm not saying he was, like, dominant by any. Like, I'm not saying this was like,
It wasn't meaningful yardage, though, for the Texans. They were committed to David Johnson.
That's not fully true, because the first touchdown drive David Johnson really dominated in, and it's not just the rushing core, you know, it's the receiving ability. That would be the sign where I'd say they did better against David Johnson than others, because they held David Johnson to a little over 100 yards total, which, you know, between rushing and receiving, which is not a bad outcome for them, especially considering how much they were up at any given time. But the two examples he mentions are absolutely true. They held the 49ers down much below their normal average, and they completely controlled Derrick Henry in that Titans game to a point. But we're talking about two games 8 months ago and one game where you can make the argument they did okay against the run, but I can make the argument they didn't. If you're allowing 7 yards a carry, I'm not sure how well you did stopping the run.
So you think against the Chargers, if they give up over $150 on the ground to the backs?
I said 170 to two.
172, you think they'll be in trouble late?
Yes.
Okay.
If they give up 170 to two, they gave up only 118 rushing yards to the Houston Texans. They start getting that 170 to 200 range. That means that they did keep it out of their hands a little bit. And no, that doesn't solve all your problems against the Chiefs, because they can score in 55 seconds.
It
doesn't mean to win. I think the game is much closer if they end up in that range. That's the only way they can lose. Win is fairly easy. Show up, play most games 99% of the time, and do it. Control what you can control, and you're really not going to have any trouble. To me, you don't even have to do anything flashy. Just score your run-of-the-mill 28 points, and you're probably going to win this football game. Because if you score 28 to 33 like any Chiefs team would, even in an average, below-average week, that's more than enough to get the win.
And we know about just the Chiefs in the division, and now it's a mini bye week essentially for Andy Reid, and we know the success he has off of bye weeks 18-3. We know in September he just doesn't lose football games. We know, in fact, Patrick Mahomes has never lost a football game in his short career in the month of September. He's now 8-0, has not even thrown an interception in those eight games in the month of September. This was Mitch Holthus, the voice of the Chiefs, earlier this morning on Fesco in the Morning about why the Chiefs just continue to dominate the AFC West and opponents like the Chargers.
I think Andy puts that much emphasis on it. he works, I've mentioned this before, there will be OTA workouts in June that the guys don't even know about that he has studied all spring and summer, let's say the Chargers, and it'll be Charger Day. Now, the staff, the coaches know it, but the players don't necessarily know it. And then he'll do it again maybe during a mini camp, and then he does it again during training camp. But he just puts such emphasis on the division because he knows that's the first box you have to check. What has he won in 22 years? He's won 14 division titles. Because not only has he owned the AFC West in winning four straight titles, but he pretty much had his run in the NFC East there for a long time with the Eagles. I think he, well, said four here, so what would it be, like 10 titles or something like that? So Andy knows because that's where he puts his first emphasis. And it really starts again with Andy Reid.
And I'm sure plenty of coaches focus on the vision, but you wonder, like, comparatively, sure, to other coaches, like, how much more do the Chiefs and what Mitch just described there about OTAs and on certain practices when you don't even realize you're prepping for the opponent, at least the players maybe not don't even realize that. How many other teams are putting that much focus on it? They certainly should be, but it's clear the Chiefs there, it doesn't matter. We're talking about how the Chargers, they'll have no problem with them, they'll have no problem against the Broncos, they'll have no problem against the Ray, all that. Clearly, that's not the mindset, obviously, that the organization has towards the division. And that the Chiefs, I don't see why the dominance of the AFC West will not continue, and I think it starts this year right away against the Chargers. We're going to see a fairly dominant victory for Kansas City to start 1-0 the division and get well on their way to another AFC West title.
Well, I mean there's no reason to think they're not going to win the AFC West again. And I think you can go back through, you can say 14 of, you know, 22 is, that's a hell of a division success rate. That's better than most. Now, that's not Bill Belichick, right? There's still, you know, apt comparisons of people who have dominated more than that even in recent history that had been the case. But the fact that he came to Kansas City, a team that had never even won back-to-back divisions, I'm dead serious, in their entire history, they had never even won back-to-back divisions before Andy Reid showed up, has now gone back-to-back-to-back-to-back, surely can't be ignored. The reason why they can win their division every year now, to me, more so now, has a lot less to do with they prepare for the teams than they're just the better team. You know how easy it is to win the division when you're just the better team? No one has been, they didn't win the divisions early on because they weren't the better team. The Broncos were. The Broncos had the better quarterback and the better players. So they won the division. Andy kept it close because he was the better coach. And then when he got the better talent and is the better coach, okay, now it's really easy, in my opinion, to win divisions and win a lot of division games. And yeah, any team that wins their division typically does pretty well. Andy's a lock for 5, sometimes 6 wins in any given divisional year. But, I'm not in any way really worried about this game.
Do you still think it's got the makings of a trap game?
I just said, like, it's the same.
Because early in the week, we were, of course, had that discussion.
Yeah, and it's not, I'm just saying, like, those are all the components we normally put in it. If you want to have the conversation, the Chiefs can no longer be trapped, then let's have that conversation. But to me, the game itself, I'm not saying they're going to lose the game, because obviously I think they're going to win. To me, the component part of it was that this is what you would typically consider that. This is what you would consider the components of what would be a trap game. I don't know why the week of the season really matters necessarily scenario.
I think it does a little bit, because you're not caught off. You don't know. In week 9, you might know, let's say, the Chargers just flat out suck and they've got one win, okay?
Sure.
And that's easier mindset wise.
But you don't know the Chargers
week
suck.
Week 2, for all you know, nobody knows. We think we know. We think we know, but we don't know. And I think the week does factor into that. If it was later in the year, it's much more susceptible to being what you would call that, which is why I obviously
Miami
disagreed
in
the
December
week.
Stuff. Fine,
sure, maybe so. Maybe so, but I get the sense too, this goes back to the success that Andy Reid has had. There's some coach, especially if you're new, like where your guys can fall in that trap. It's just hard to imagine.
But they fell in a trap week 1 in Andy Reid's era to the Titans. So like that team stunk. That Titans team stunk that year. They were not that good.
That's week 1. You said week 1?
Yeah.
Yeah, week 1 of the season, you wouldn't say that's a trap game either. It's week 1 of the season, Cody.
I think you can fall asleep on opponents. See, trap is different.
Like week 1 of the season, weird things
happen. We're probably just defining it different. But to me, a week 1 trap game is the same as a week 2 or a week 13. It is the sleepiness factor of you think you can walk past a team or ill-preparedness or whatever the reasons that you get tripped up by inferior opponents over the course of seasons. It happens to all kinds of people. Like the Dolphins game last year where they beat the Patriots. It's not really a trap game. The Patriots know they have to win that game. in order to get the bye week that they desire into the season. They know they have to win it. So it's hard to, because we don't have, an actual guideline for how to justify it. To me, any game in which you play a lesser opponent that you were definitively supposed to beat, i.e. this week, that falls in that category for me of trap. And I know sometimes we don't know those things going into it because we don't realize how bad those teams are. But typically it's, when you're starting to head into that second week, you see just how good or bad those teams are and which teams they're more worried about.
Coming up in 10 minutes, you'll have a chance to win a large specialty pizza from The Other Place. Two chances here, 10:30 and 12:30, each and every Friday during the football season on Cody and Gold. We'll also hear from Clyde Edwards-Alaire, who joined us yesterday, and also his running back coach, and acknowledging the goal line struggles that we saw week one. But we know the Chiefs are on the road this week, and they have this gap, and then they'll return back home. And the Chiefs had more fans and still have more fans than anybody else has had in the National Football League. Last night we saw 6,000 fans at the Browns game. Yep. They still managed to have a fight in the stands. Go figure. I think we'll see that continuing to happen. That stuff's not going to change. It is surprising you had, 10% of their stadium capacity and they still had it.
But impressive, honestly.
I guess so. I mean,
how are you even close enough to be fighting?
Well, they were. You saw the video. I think a lot of people were trying to break up the fight. That's why I don't think they were all that close to begin with.
I'm just going to let people, this is social distancing time, sir. We're out of the breaking up fights business. If two people are stupid enough to fight in the times of COVID, they just got to go.
Okay. Well, the Chiefs.
I got to break things up?
I'm not touching them.
This is your problem.
Would you normally anyway? Are you the guy in a normal setting where, let's say, you're three rows behind the fight? Are you actually going down three rows to try to break that up to begin with?
Oh boy!
In a football game, no.
Football game, hell no.
Maybe.
Okay, because we've all sat in the upper deck at Arrowhead, and things get a little rowdy at times, and there's going to be some fights up there. I just want to know if Cody Taft is the guy that's going to break up the fight.
I don't think so. I've broken up fights, and I would say that just like everything in life, it's like holding a door for someone to go inside the store. There's a distance in which this is definitively not my problem.
Okay.
Right? There's a distance in which every fight, like you said, a bar, Serta. If we're at a pretty good size bar, if we're at Kelly's in Westport, and you're up by the pizza place, and I'm down by the door, and you two are fighting, I'm out. This is not my responsibility. I'm too far to be breaking up this fight.
That's not my business.
Yeah, if you're more than three or four tables over, this really feels like tables two and three problem. I'm here at table four. I can't be held responsible for this. Three rows is a lot to jump. Row in front of me, two rows in front of me, I might have a problem.
Really? If I don't know the person, I am not. Because you know how many times we see when fans will videotape the fight and someone does try to break it up and they end up as the one that gets punched in the face and they end up on the ground. No. If I don't know the person, I'm staying out of it. The reason why I bring this up, because we know the Chiefs announced yesterday they did have a fan at that Thursday night game to open up the season who attended and tested positive for COVID-19, and everyone that sat near them is in quarantine. But it seems like the Chiefs and the health department have done a good job of tracing everybody that was around. They got the guy on video. Basically, they know exactly who this individual was. And it seems like hopefully that they're able to limit this and everybody was following the proper protocols. Does this impact other people when they're looking at buying tickets for the
Would it deter you?
Later. Well, I told you I'm not going to a Chiefs game this year. I've already made that decision. So as far as deterring me, I've already made up my mind.
Sure.
I'm curious if it's somebody that said, you know what, maybe in October I'll go to a game, but I saw someone did test positive. I'm not going to go. The reason why I ask it too is because I feel like if you made a decision already, you were going to go. One person testing positive is not going to deter you.
You must have known that was going. Wasn't it really a 99.9% chance someone was going to test positive the game? This is not surprising news.
Yeah. So
I think some people were making a big deal about while that happened, the other NFL teams were announcing they were going to have either some or more fans in their stands. I'm like, yeah, you know that people who you can't test on, an everyday basis, someone's going to test positive. I don't think it would deter me as a fan if I was already considering going.
Were you asked me, at this point?
I don't think I had decided one way or the other, truthfully. Okay. I mean, in this early going, it wasn't something I had really considered. But there's also the thing we talked about in the early going. It's like, is the juice worth the squeeze? Are you going to pay above what market value was last year for a ticket that doesn't include the atmosphere? And then it becomes very difficult. So, I mean, that's the part that would hold me up more so than even one fan testing positive for COVID. As I assume I have been inside of an establishment where one person has done that, despite the fact I haven't gone to bars or anything like that. I assume I've been somewhere where someone has tested positive in this time of COVID.
Coming up next, your chance to win a large specialty pizza from the other place. And the Chiefs acknowledge those missed opportunities at the goal line.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
Back here on Cody and Gold, coming up in 30 minutes, we'll check in with our Chiefs insider and also rapper, Pete Sweeney. After that performance yesterday, we've got to talk to him just a little
special
bit about
feature.
That. He was part of your birthday song to a rap to Patrick Mahomes.
Seemed like it had some real traction yesterday, fellas.
It did.
That means it's well-liked if I
you should feel really good,
factor
Cody.
Factor this correctly.
The biggest criticism was not you. It was the involvement of Pete Sweeney. He's got
Pete's
a chance
a
to maybe redeem himself. We'll see. So Pete Sweeney going to join us coming up at 11 o'clock. You heard us talking about Tyrod Taylor and, excuse me, about the Chargers. And, well, there you go. I'm going to make it very, very easy for
wow,
you.
Wow, just
know,
way to blow it.
I know. Well, who did I say would have a career day for the Chargers? Cody's shaking his head at me.
Gosh.
I know. Who did I say would have a career day for the Chargers? I don't know who I said. 913-576-7610.
We try to tell these people to listen for 15 minutes of the show to hear one thing, and then you tell them that thing immediately to win the pizza from the other place.
A large specialty pizza from the other place. If you knew who I said, we'll have to have a career day to beat the Chiefs on Sunday. Call in, be the first caller with that answer, and Sir will hook you up there with a large specialty pizza from the other place. See how easy it is? We might even give you the answer before. You never know. Another chance, by the way, coming up at 12:30. The Chiefs did yesterday acknowledge something that we had brought up on Friday after the game, and that was the goal line struggles from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I remember when we talked on Friday, we were wondering, is it Clyde? Is it the O-line? Was it just the Texans keying in on him? And we had Clyde on the show yesterday. And each and every Thursday during the football season, we'll have an exclusive one-on-one interview with a different player, and we were fortunate enough to have Clyde yesterday join us on the show. And Clyde mentioned that it was kind of a little bit of both, and we had discussed specifically, is it something that you should be concerned about or something you need to watch going forward? And I thought it was hilarious almost, and I know the writer, and that would be Adam Teicher over at ESPN, didn't write the headline, but there was a headline in the top four stories for NFL, the NFL portion of ESPN.com yesterday. You know what it was? It said, Chiefs are concerned about Clyde Edwards-Helaire at the goal line, which I think is a big overstep from actually what was said. I think it was an acknowledgement from the Chiefs that they weren't maybe pleased with how the goal line situation went. I told you it's something I want to watch the next couple weeks and see if they get that figured out. And it seems like it is something that can be. This was Dylan McCullough, the Chiefs running back coach, yesterday. He was asked about the goal line situations for Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Well, I can tell you, speaking from the perspective, the running back perspective, I mean, we took it very personally that we didn't score. Because when you look at those, I mean, it was a situation where Clyde, again, with it being his first game in the NFL with no preseason, et cetera, live opportunities down there on the goal line. Bottom line is if he follow all of the keys that we're coached up to do in that room, he scores. So some of the things we're talking about right now will be a moot point. But again, as he continues to grow, and that he took a big growth after last game, and he'll take another big step into this game. But regardless of what the plan is, when we're down there, the running back's job is to score, and we need to do everything that we coach to do, and we'll score a touchdown.
I mean, that's a pretty straightforward acknowledgement.
It
like,
was
look, like,
Clyde Edwards-Helaire's fault, not the offensive line.
Yeah, like, hey, if you do the things that you're supposed to do in that situation, we're scoring. What I like about it, though, is it clearly sounds like they already feel like the next practice that those issues, whatever they may have been, that he already recognized that he being Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and that it's not. That's why I don't think people should be concerned, which is that's why the headline to me was a little bit funny. Like the Chiefs are concerned. That didn't sound like they're concerned about it. They were acknowledging there was an issue there that in execution
wasn't
there.
Dylan McCullough is also telling you we didn't get a single day of preseason or regularly scrimmaged practice against another team. Now, the Chiefs don't typically do that. Where you might be able to actually work on that thing in the goal line and find out the angle where to go. I don't think they're concerned about it. But is it like if you were a Clyde Edwards-Helaire fantasy owner, I guess I'd be a little bit worried. Because the Chiefs seemingly continued to get in the end zone, even though Clyde was struggling down there. Only one of those drives stalled out. The rest, they found their way back in. So it didn't kill them in the end. But yeah, you would like to be able to trust that he could get in there and close that out. Because that is one of the most important jobs a running back does. Teams will keep a running back on their roster, Gold, specifically for the reason of getting end zone scores. Like, they will take it away from their back, who does a really, really good job, 20-20, just to give it that guy inside the five if he's good at finding the end zone. If Clyde wants that responsibility, he's going to have to prove he can do that.
Congrats to Josh and Casey Moe. He's the winner of the large specialty pizza from the other place. Tyrod Taylor's the guy that has to have the career day for the Chargers to have any chance against the Chiefs on Sunday. Next chance to win a large pizza from the other place coming up at 12:30 here on Cody and Gold. And yeah, I mean, he gained Clyde negative 2 yards and six carries in those goal line situations against the Texans. Just like I don't think we'll see a ton of 25 carry games, I don't think we'll see a ton of negative 2 yards if he's getting more than one or two carries at the goal line throughout the game. It is something I want to watch. Like, you know, this week, if he gets, he's going to get another goal line opportunity. There's a decent chance of that. And is it something that's going to be more successful this go around? How much of it was the creativity? That was one of the reasons we thought maybe they didn't have the success. Were they just trying to be vanilla near the goal line, not show a whole lot for their next couple of opponents? And it was something that was easy to key in on if you're the Texans. Sounds like it really wasn't so much that. It was more that just some miscues, and it wasn't the offensive line having the issues. A step further on that as well, this was Eric Bieniemy about the short yarded situations for Clyde.
Clyde got to do a better job of making those guys right, and he understands that. He has to be disciplined and sound with his footwork, and he saw that. And I know he's if anything, he's probably the most critical person of his own performance. Although it was a good performance, he knows he left some things out there on the field that could have helped us to be better. So there are some things in those areas that he can help us, and he understands that. He's working on that, and Coach Dillon's doing a heck of a job of cleaning all that stuff up. But also, too, like I said earlier, these guys have a good chemistry and a good feel for one another. Everything starts up front, regardless of what side the ball you're on. On our side of the ball, those guys understand that with them, we can accomplish a lot of things, whether it's in the pass game or in the run game. If we're struggling up front, it makes for a tough day.
Yeah, I mean, at least one game in, it seems like when you have the performance overall that the Chiefs had and you're at the level that the Chiefs are, these are, I mean, they're not good problems to have,
they're
but these are
solvable problems.
Yeah, like you're, oh my God, there's one thing, it stands out more because there's very few things you can pinpoint from at least the week one performance where you're like, man, this was a serious problem for the Chiefs. This is really the glaring one. You can talk about the linebacker play, no doubt. We'll talk more about the defense later on during the Chiefs Red Half Hour, less than an hour from now. But overall, that's why this got brought up and clearly, apparently, and maybe this is what we need to expect on a national level. Anytime you have something go wrong in the smallest way possible, the Chiefs are always going to be that top headline. I guess that's where we're at overall. Because I was just pretty interesting to me to see that you take concern out of the out of those answers. That didn't sound like concern from EB. It didn't sound like concern from McCullough. It sounded like, yeah, they were a little frustrated that some of the things they had talked about weren't executed.
This is what Clyde Edwards-Helaire said with us here on Cody and Gold. Remember, you can hear exclusive interviews with Chiefs players every Thursday at 10:30. This week, we talked to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He addressed the issues himself.
You know, ultimately, I guess they were probably keying in on me, but it's the NFL. You have to give them that props. Those guys on the other side of the ball get paid to do their job, and you know, the goal line in the NFL is a real deal. So ultimately, it's some things that we need to clean up, and some things that we could have done better, some things that I could have done better. I feel like I could have scored some more touchdowns, but it'll be all cleaned up.
That's the thing for me is that, again, if we went back to week one and we're like, all right, what are their biggest problems? What are the things that concern you the most? Be like, all right, linebacker play, I guess. Even though they masked that pretty well, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire didn't get in the goal line, that's it. The end of list. Not Mahomes. Not Clyde in general. Not the wide receivers. Not the defensive backs because Ward got hurt, but he could still play depending on if he practices today. Right? I mean, there's just not that much to worry about with them right now, which is a really great sign for Kansas City.
And maybe we'll get a little update on that potentially at 1 o'clock. You'll hear from Andy Reid. We'll carry his Friday press conference live here on 610 Sports Radio. Meanwhile, the Royals, they're back at it tonight. Yesterday was an off day. Danny Duffy is on the bump. He'll look for his fourth win on the season. Just a couple more starts to go inside of 10 games left in this 2020 baseball season. And we look ahead to the future as we have quite a bit here in the last week or so and what they have going forward and the philosophy within the organization. There was a really interesting article that was put out from Kylie McDaniel, and it was over at ESPN and in one of their insider articles. And they're talking about how the different organizations are in terms of aggressiveness, really, and risk-taking with drafting, with trades, with everything. And I'm curious if you were – how surprised were you the category, which there's four of them, advantage gambler, hedge funder, tentative gut feeler, and gunslinger. If I would have, if you've seen this chart already.
Sure.
But would you have guessed that Dayton Moore and the Kansas City Royals would be in the gunslinger, one of nine teams, the gunslinger category in terms of confidence and high risk tolerance of an organization, knowing what we know about Dayton Moore and what we know about the Royals?
No, why would I think that?
Yeah. Like, but that's where they have him, man.
I understand what Kylie McDaniel's talking about here. And when you go back through, he'll actually explain to you that Dayton Moore was actually more risk tolerant at the times in which he was the GM of a team that was near the playoffs, which would suggest to you, if Salvador Perez's comments are right, he yesterday had said that he felt like this is like the 2013 Royals. If he's correct on his timeline and next year the Royals are going to be competing for a playoff spot like they were in 14, and then in 15, in 2022, they'll be a possible World Series contender, then you were talking about a team that is getting ready to take even more heightened risk than we've already seen them take, Gold. And the thing I would tell you about this that I both agree with and also still don't like about some of the moves that they make inside of that is, you know, with him, you look at the grouping of teams they're with, it's not a bad company to be with. Colorado, Chicago White Sox, Detroit, Oakland, the Mets, Miami, Washington, and the Padres. You're going to tell yourself, like, okay, Washington stinks. Like, right, they haven't been good all year. Detroit stinks. The Mets, you know, haven't. Like, a lot of these teams haven't been right. You sure you want to be a gunslinger? Are you sure that's the category you want to be in? I think part of the reason they're viewed this way is because they tend to target a type of player that no other team targets. You can find good and bad teams in every group. The gunslinger group has good and bad teams. The advantage gambler, as you put it, has good and bad teams in it. The hedge funder has good and bad teams in it. But at the same time, the grouping that has the best tolerance for having success is advantage gambler, taking advantage of weaknesses where other people finding a disadvantage. The Dodgers, the Twins, the Rays, hell, Seattle, Cincinnati, teams that I don't mind their model going forward, tend to do their somewhere between progressive and analytics versus where they have KC, which is more traditional scouting-based things. I'm not saying it can't be both, but Kansas City probably needs to make sure their model is still working for them because, you know, Kylie will tell you that they've essentially, Kylie McDaniel of ESPN will tell you they've been this type of team this entire time. It's just weird of thinking the Royals as being a gunslinger type mentality.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see probably more further separation as time goes on and we see different philosophies and also some younger minds inside of organizations as well in terms of where this, if you were to look at this chart like 10 years from now, how many more would be on the gunslinger end? How few would be down in the tentative? Because there's only three. You've already seen a shift. There's only three organizations that they put kind of riding the fence as far as being a tentative, you know, they put it gut feeler. And it's St. Louis, it's the Cubs, and it's the Texas Rangers. And then even though Detroit and Oakland are in the guns, they're right on that traditional scouting line. And it's important, though, even though the Royals are listed as being this gunslinger organization, which is still amazing thing. Like, Dayton Moore, gunslinger, Royals organization, gunslinger, just doesn't sound right overall. But they are not as high. Like, the one that's the organization that's clearly the most aggressive, it lists as right now, it lists the Padres.
Been aggressive.
The Padres and the Washington Nationals and the Miami Marlins. Even though they're in the same category as the Royals based off of this, the Royals are still further down towards the traditional old school scouting philosophy. And that's that balance. I think going forward, it'll be very interesting when we, for the first time, are going to see the Royals, what we think is going to be a surplus of pitching. Okay.
Because of them actually being safe, by the way.
Correct.
And taking college arms, they could scout and versus high school players they couldn't in these previous years. Right.
Something that you can be one consistently. Because I wonder if we fast forward a year, 2 years from now, and the pitching, we start to learn a little bit more about what the guys that we haven't even seen yet are, Lynch and Ace Lacy's of the world. Are they going to actually be more aggressive at that point in time? Once they know in their mind they have the pitching figured out and a surplus of pitching and they need to be more aggressive to go find the other pieces necessary. I would imagine if you were to track, like if you had you see the graphics all the time that move over time and it's really interesting. You whether it was from 2015 to now and you see them on Twitter all the time now. I would be interesting to follow other organizations, or specifically the Royals, if you go back from 2015, and I feel like kind of just moved the Royals logo around to each different category for the next 15 years. And how many times do you stay in that one cat? How many times does an organization just stay solidified? Like the Yankees, okay? The Yankees are the
Royals have consistently stayed
there. Yeah, they have. Will that continue? Because like the hedge funder category, most teams are under that, by the way. Progressive analytics, hedge fund, the Yankees, the Astros, the Angels, those are the teams that are right there in that category.
Yeah, spend a lot, use analytics, because in a way, it's funny because, like, you know what the hedge funder, essentially the knock on them, you know why you get mixed results in that category? Is you can spend to buy out some of your problems, but you don't put in the actual finances like the Royals do for the work. You hire four guys in front of a computer, and I like analytics, you know that. Oh, yeah. You hire four guys in front of a computer who, like a stock ticker in the 1910s, it churns out the numbers, and they're like, cool, this is what we'll go with. Thanks, Steve. Steve, have you watched him pitch at all? Nope. Cool. Don't care. Sounds good. Your numbers are close enough. We'll just do that. And if we make mistakes along the way, we will buy ourselves out of our problems because it's cheaper to do that than it is to actually pay all of these huge minor league systems. That's another reason why the Royals end up in the traditional camp. They pay more scouts. They have more people on the road. They watch more players than most organizations because they think that's their advantage in the smaller market. It's just that we've seen other smaller markets like the Rays do it a different way. I feel like that's the category I want to see them lean more towards over the next 5 or 6 years.
Coming up at 11 o'clock, we'll check in with our Chiefs insider, Pete Sweeney, as we head into week number two for the Chiefs and the Chargers.
Trash of the day.
You may remember the news a month or so ago that Chuck E. Cheese was going to file for bankruptcy. You might have also remembered prior to that they had the fake pizza. Like, it wasn't fake pizza.
Papaducci's or something. I don't remember what it
was. Pasquale's pizza. It was like Pasquale's pizza.
I actually still appreciate that hustle.
It was Chuck E. Cheese pizza, but they labeled their locations like Pasquale's, which was a member of the Chuck E. Cheese band or whatever. Remember that whole thing? So anyway, unfortunately,
their mascot's a rat.
Yeah. So basically,
which for pizza is not great.
Yeah, so they thought that would help them a little bit. Unfortunately, they have had to file for bankruptcy. And there's a story out today that Chuck E. Cheese wants to destroy 7 billion prize tickets. We've all been at the prize counter. You think you got a lot of tickets. You got like 3,500. You're like, oh, man, what can I get? And then you find out you got like a squishy ball, some candy, and one
of those plastic squirt guns.
Yeah, and you might have got a mini gumball machine if you were lucky.
Jelly bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
And you could buy all that stuff for $2 at Party City.
Exactly. Yeah. A whoopee cushion that's like 500 tickets, even though it should just be 5 cents. You know, that's what they paid for. Well, this is going in the direction where they had enough of tickets to fill 65 shipping containers, each 40 feet long, with tiny pieces of paper that have the Chuck E. Cheese mascot and, as you said, sort of a rat named Chuck on it. Add enough in to cash in for $9 million worth of Chuck E. Cheese prizes is what actually that would come out to. That's the exchange rate. And then you were looking this up some more, too. Apparently, it's cheaper for them to burn all the tickets. They got to get permission from the bankruptcy court to actually destroy these tickets.
Well, they're saying it'll cost them $2 million to destroy these tickets. And I've got some good news for Chuck E. Cheese and their bankruptcy court. 65 shipping containers?
Uh-huh.
The three of you guys willing to sit in front of a shredder for some months? For a mill, split between the three of us to shred some Chuck E. Cheese tickets, we can put on a podcast, sir.
Just do the show. During the show, we can have a shredder.
Yeah, what
running.
Do you mean? I'll shred tickets for months. $2 million? Who gave you that quote? Who quoted you $2 million to shred some paper?
That's
shipping containers. Burn them. What are we doing here? Why did you fill
trying
up
to get them moved out of the facilities?
Way,
probably
why did you fill up? Why did you fill up 65 shipping containers before you're like, guys, you know what? I think we might have too many tickets.
Well, here's what happened. Apparently,
it's a real hoarding situation.
Apparently, they were shifting to e-tickets, which were reducing the wait times at their locations, and then of course they went bankrupt. But they were trying to get away from the paper tickets, but that was the stockpile.
I'll tell you right now, Chuck E. Cheese, I'll do this for $1 million. Let me work out the details. Just point me, like, get the shipping containers to Kansas City. Right outside the intercom studio, and I will get rid of 65 shipping containers worth of tickets for you for a mill.
Yeah,
I'll just do it for a cool mill.
The company, they have to get permission to spend the money to destroy these. And they
because
say
they're in bankruptcy court.
Yeah, and they say it's better to pay to destroy them than to risk having them fall into the hands of the general public. Now, they're filing bankruptcy, but are they still trying to come out of bankruptcy and operate? Is that what's going on? Because otherwise, who cares if the public gets it? If the Chuck E. Cheese doesn't exist, but are they getting bought out by somebody? Is somebody else going to take over? Is that what's going on? I don't know what the full story is. Like, Chuck E. Cheese actually closing for good?
Bankruptcy court goes a lot of different ways.
That's what I'm saying. So that's
sometimes
why they don't
that means
want
they close for good, but sometimes that means they, you know, reorganize
or whatever.
Reorganize, yeah. Redevelop their business strategy and go through all those things. I just can't get over the fact that it costs $2 million to get rid of 65 containers worth of tickets.
That's a massive amount of product.
I've seen a shipping container. I'm pretty sure I could get through like one shipping container like a month. And so even with my kids and stuff, I think it's like a shipping container a month. So I'm going to need a few years, but I'll do it for $1 million.
I went to a Chuck E. Cheese not that long ago. I drank too many beers.
I didn't even realize until I had gotten older in life that they serve beer at Chuck E. Cheese. It's
I gotta keep the parents entertained. What? Wait a second. Who were you with that you went to a Chuck E. Cheese?
It was for a niece's birthday party.
I was
something.
Just checking.
And you got too drunk.
I didn't get drunk. I feel like 4 or 5 beers at Chuck E. Cheese is too many beers to have at Chuck E. Cheese.
Start shoving kids out of the way so you can do Papa Shot. Get out of the way, Jimmy. I got some buckets to get off.
I didn't want to be there at all.
Well, you should have skipped.
I had some decent Chuck E. Cheese beers on tap.
They actually do have. The last time I went there, I had some like KC Beer Company Dunkel. It was nice. They had like local beers on tap. It was quite the treat. It wasn't, you know, I got to be honest, decent.
The band always creeped me out as a kid. I'm told as a kid I would cry when I would see the Chuck E. Cheese band.
Yeah,
the characters creeped me out as a kid.
Yeah, mascots in general. They make them for children, but they terrify them.
The band
them
is made up
part.
Of rodents.
It's weird. It's a weird model for a kid's chain, but hey man, it worked for them for a really long time until they went bankrupt and now have to pay $2 million to destroy a bunch of tickets.
Chuck E. Cheese is the Dave and Busters of the world are probably struggling a little bit with just to say the least at this point in time.
Yeah.
Also on the text line to you, Cody, we have enough things burning at the moment. Just shred them, sir.
Okay, fine.
No burning of them. People are like, drop them all over.
They don't even have to buy me the shredder. I'll buy that into my $1 million profits. I'll buy like a really big one.
Yeah, you're going to need one.
A really big one,
that takes up a
entire
warehouse.
I'm just
going to
be shoveling it in with a pitchfork all the time. It's going to be great.
Very important stuff.
$2 million. $2 million. Who the hell quoted that? Seems like way too much to destroy some tickets.
Some confidential document shredding company that exists. What, Shred It? Is that a company? I believe it is. Shred It. Pretty simple. All right, coming up next, Pete Sweeney, our Chiefs insider, a rapper. He tries to redeem himself. Next.
Cody and Gold, weekdays 10 to 2, 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.